July, according to preliminary numbers, is going to be the hottest month on record. And the United Nations is out with a new report that raises some big questions about the effect of agriculture on climate change and vice versa. The report comes from the International Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC. It says the way we use the world's land, like farming, cutting down forests, account for nearly a quarter of global human greenhouse gas emissions. The report also says a changing climate could put the world's food supply at risk. Chris Kucharik is a professor and chair of UW-Madison's Department of Agronomy and a professor of environmental studies. Chris, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Well, on the cause side of things, I think people, when they think about climate change, think about power plants and cars and burning fossil fuels. They don't necessarily think about farming, agriculture, and land use. Can you talk about the role they can play in causing climate change?
Sure. I think the first fact to point out is that up until about World War II, land use around the globe was really one of the primary contributors to buildup of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. And it wasn't until after World War II that fossil fuel emissions began to greatly outpace land use change. But, you know, what does land use change actually mean? It's doing things like deforestation, cutting down forests. There's a carbon that's locked up in plants and soils that gets released back to the atmosphere as CO2 that had maybe been stored there for hundreds of thousands of years.
CO2 is the ingredient a lot of people think about with climate change, but it sounds like when it comes to agriculture, methane is a big pollutant that people are worried about.
Right. Methane, due to animal agriculture, methane is also a more potent greenhouse gas than CO2 on a molecule-per-molecule basis, and there's also nitrous oxide, which is a byproduct oftentimes of adding inorganic fertilizers to the soil to grow crops.
You mentioned animal agriculture, and I think sometimes people kind of laugh at, animals, livestock burping is causing climate change. But to talk about when you've got the number of livestock we've got on the planet, the impact that can have.
Right. We're talking about large numbers, and, animals themselves are part of the equation. There are certain crops that we grow under certain conditions also that can release methane from soils due to the conditions that they're exposed to. But, you add up the number of animals we have on the planet and, every little bit ends up being a pretty large amount.
Let's get into that report a little bit. It's a big report. It talks about the impact of the methane. What are some of your key takeaways from agriculture and land use in this report and how it plays into climate change?
Well, I think the first thing that I took note of is that, we really need a radical transformation of global land use and our food systems. And, these IPCC reports come out pretty regularly. And I think this was the first time that a really strong message was sent about the role of land use change and its impacts on the climate system, and that we really need to make some changes soon.
What are some of the biggest changes that they point to that could make a difference?
Better management of our soils is probably one of the key things we can do in ways that we're not releasing CO2 that's tied up in plants and soils back to the atmosphere. The deforestation problem that we see in the Amazon and how we're clearing large tracts of land so we can, basically grow more animals on that land and in pastures is a big loss to the point that, we could create an area of the earth that could be resembling more like a desert, a very dry region once you go through those changes.
Right. Phrase that keeps coming up in the report is desertification.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You lose plants are very good at, basically recycling water that falls as rainfall through something we call evapotranspiration that can have a cooling effect that's good for certain areas, and, land use change can greatly impact the climate system. And I think that's one thing people have to remember is that, changes in climate will impact how your plants grow in your backyard, but vice versa on a global scale, the third of the planet that's growing crops and animals, basically, has a significant impact on the climate system.
Talking to Chris Kucharik from UW-Madison's Department of Agronomy. He's also a professor of environmental studies, looking at a new report from UN on agriculture, land use, and climate change. Agriculture can be a contributor to climate change, and it can be damaged by climate change. And let's look at that flip side of this report, Chris, talking about how our food systems, the food we grow and eat, could be damaged by climate change.
Yeah. We're becoming more and more worried about simultaneous crop failures in different regions with a changing climate, meaning we've got certain regions that are key suppliers of staple crops of wheat and rice and, let's say, soybeans and corn. And as the climate continues to change and we have more and more extreme weather events, some of these might happen simultaneously in different areas of the planet and could completely devastate certain food supplies in certain years, which is a really big problem. And, you know, on a local to regional scale, dealing with more floods and more droughts and extreme heat are all really not good things when it comes to managing our crops and growing food.
Right. We do have extreme weather events already, but the hope is, okay, if Wisconsin's corn crop is damaged by flooding, Iowa's might be okay. What happens if you start seeing both of them hit at the same time?
Right. And I think we saw a lot of that this spring with the catastrophic flooding, you know, a delay in spring, you know, farmers planting some corn into July. I mean, these are unprecedented events. And, you know, my worry is that, you know, as we have more frequent events like that, it's not going to be that a farmer faces an extreme event once every 20 or 30 years. It might be once every other year. And they just aren't going to be able to recover from some of those sequence of events in multiple years.
Let's get into some more of the recommendations from the report. One that's got a lot of attention is saying, hey, people of the world, especially people in more advanced countries, higher wealth countries, you can make a difference here by changing what you eat and how much of different types of food you eat. What are they looking at?
Yeah, eating less meat. Like, that seems to be the easy one that everyone points to. And it's the obvious answer that you'll hear, because people will say, well, if you're eating beef from cows, well, cows obviously give off methane. That's a greenhouse gas. But there's really more to the story than that. I mean, it's really about the amount of land and feed that's needed to produce that meat. You know, a large percentage of what we grow as corn in the U.S. goes to feeding animals, unfortunately. So if we can start to divert some of that land away, you know, due to less meat being needed, we can do better things with that land and maybe sequester carbon on that landscape.
And this IPCC report doesn't say everybody go vegan tomorrow,
no.
Right? What are they suggesting for people?
You know, probably a better mix, a more healthy, you know, diet. I think, you know, there's a win-win here for human health as well as the climate system. You know, obviously we have rising obesity rates. A lot of this is connected to, you know, the way food is just rapidly and quickly available and processed. And so more plant-based, you know, just eating more of those things is obviously going to be better. Hmm.
It sounds like a really small change for one person to make. Is this something that if we had a culture change where we changed our diet to, I think, the equivalent of 1.5 hamburgers a week being the amount of beef people might be shooting for, if that becomes a norm, is that really enough to put a significant dent in our emission numbers?
Yeah, I believe so. I think, you know, those small choices add up when you're talking about the number of people that might consume, you know, that amount. And there's just a lot of small things I think that people can do and probably have to take a good look in the mirror about, you know, their own desires and needs, you know, from a dietary standpoint. And one of the things that, you know, we find is that some of the environmental issues that we've created, unfortunately, through agricultural land management, like the water quality issues, people like cheese, ice cream, pizza. To have that stuff means you need to, unfortunately, grow a lot of, you know, animals and cows and that. And sometimes those two things don't go together very easily.
One of our reporters got a reaction to the report from Darren Von Ruden with the Wisconsin Farmers Union. He was definitely interested in some of the recommendations of the report, but he was worried about some of the recommendations that came to dairy and beef here in Wisconsin. Here's a listen to some of what he had to say.
As a dairy producer and a beef producer, is there enough fruits and vegetables out there to feed the world or not?
So do we have the capacity to feed the world in a different way than we're doing right now?
Oh, I think we do. I think what people generally point to is that it's, you know, we're producing enough. It's just the distribution of food that is the key problem here. And, you know, there are other ways to grow animals. We don't have to be necessarily feeding them lots of corn grain. We're starting to see more shifts to regenerative agriculture, an idea of getting animals back on the landscape and growing perennial grasses and having them graze more, sort of the way things we may have been doing things a long time ago. And those types of ideas help regenerate the soil, sequester carbon a bit better than our current system. So I don't think it's like completely saying, you know, we're going to get rid of those animals. There's just a better way to think about how we can grow them and treat our natural resources a bit better.
Talking to Chris Kucharik with UW-Madison's Department of Agronomy and the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies, looking at a new report from the United Nations on how farming, agriculture, our use of land impacts, increases climate change, and how climate change could affect our food supply in the future. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about the findings of this report and what you've heard about it? Have you changed your diet? Would you consider changing your diet to be a little more plant-based over time? Could you see yourself reducing the amount of meat that you eat? If you work in agriculture, what are the challenges that come with making sustainability a bigger focus of your operation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now about a new UN report that looks at how our use of land impacts global climate change. Chris Kucharik is with us, professor of agronomy and environmental studies at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. This report looks at the ways that food production, among other things, can contribute to climate change and how climate change can impact our food system. What do you want to see change when it comes to this report, when it comes to sustainable agriculture? If you're a farmer yourself, could you get on board with some of the changes you're hearing about? If you eat food, I imagine you do, are you thinking about making a change in what you eat with the climate in mind? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let's bring on a caller now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. I realize trees pull in a lot of carbon dioxide, which is good, but then when the leaves fall off and they rot, does that release methane? And as a result, well, what should we do about the leaves, or do with the leaves?
So, good question, Dennis. So, actually, when leaves fall and you have decomposition, that's actually CO2 that is released as a byproduct due to microbes basically chomping on that material. So there's typically not methane involved. Methane is typically coming from wetlands that may be drained, you know, to grow crops. But it's usually not a concern given the carbon cycle with trees.
The report does talk some about not just deforestation, but reforestation. And I've heard a proposal lately, something like if the world could plant, I think the number was a trillion or so trees, it could make a difference for climate change. It may not be as easy as that, though. What is the role of reforestation here, Chris?
Well, yeah, you know, anytime you're putting something that's taking up CO2 from the atmosphere, and trees obviously are a great way and have lots of different other environmental benefits, but you have to think about, where are those trees being planted? Are they displacing crops off of, you know, good soils and putting crops onto more highly erodible soils or degraded soils? It's not always a simple solution when you're talking about the total sheer amount of trees that it might take and, you know, where we're actually going to end up putting those.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go now to Greg with us in Mineral Point. Greg, hi.
Good afternoon. Good topic. I just wanted to make a comment as far as changing people's diets from corn-fed beef to grass-fed beef. Supply and demand has a lot to do with that. I grow grass-fed beef if I thought I could have a market for it, where, like, I could make a money or make a living doing that.
Greg, thanks for the call. Is there a demand? Will consumers buy sustainable products, Chris, even if maybe they're more expensive?
Yeah, I think right now they're more expensive, and you know, you can see them at the supermarket. I think it's a gradual change that has to just happen, you know, over time. And I think to transform agriculture and the system that we're in now to something that we desire, there's going to have to be some incentives, some sort of programs that allow farmers to take that risk to move from what they're doing now to something in the future that we'd like them to do. And I think we're kind of waiting for someone in leadership, you know, in the political arena to stand up and make a bold statement and goal that gets us there.
Are you seeing much of that, the bold statements?
No, I haven't. But I think, you know, as time goes on, we're seeing, you know, more and more of the red flags going up and saying we really need to act. You know, reports like this are one way of getting people talking, you know, about it.
Thanks a lot for that call. John joins us now in Oconomowoc. John, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up, John?
Good. Well, I am a dairy farmer from Oconomowoc, and I'm out on my tractor right now and heard your program. There has been some data put out in regards to greenhouse gas production in the United States from agriculture versus the whole world. And those numbers, which come from EPA and UC Davis, seem to indicate that agriculture would put out somewhere less than 10% of our greenhouse gas emissions here in the United States in a developed country. And I would like the professor to comment on that versus a whole world scenario, which the UN frequently looks at.
John, thanks a lot for the call. So do we know the proportion of agriculture in the U.S. in particular when it comes to climate change emissions?
I think we do. Unfortunately, I don't have the statistics off the top of my head, but I think, you know, we're pretty much, you know, on par. We do certainly grow similar types of crops as I do in other types of the world, have similar management practices. But yeah, I'm sorry I don't have the exact numbers there to cite.
Gotcha. Thanks a lot for the call. When it comes to per capita emissions, not just talking about agriculture, but in general, like a lot of times people stack the U.S. against countries like China or India. When it comes to a per person basis, how do we Americans stack up against the rest of the world? Not so much at exact numbers, but ballpark.
Yeah, we're not good. We're still, you know, near the top in terms of total emissions and that. And it's, you know, you hear about these other countries that are more rapidly developing that are doing worse than we are, and then it always comes back to us. Well, then why are we the ones that have to set the standard and be the leaders on this? And I'm like, well, we have to be. You know, we're looked at and viewed as a world leader in a lot of different areas, and this is just one other area that we can be good in.
Talking about a new report on agriculture and climate change, how agriculture contributes to climate change, how a changing climate could impact, maybe hurt agriculture in the long run. That report from the United Nations. Chris Kucharik is with us, professor of agronomy and environmental studies at UW-Madison. I often ask people who study climate change about their relative levels of optimism when it comes to reining in the rate of climate change. Where are you on optimism, pessimism here?
I'm still optimistic. I think that's just my very nature as my personality, given all the other problems we're trying to work on, too. But I think, you know, this is in the discussion so much now that people are really learning more. They're understanding more. My concern is that it's hard to talk to the everyday person and explain to them how climate change impacts their daily life. And there's not enough examples where I think people feel like, oh, yeah, that particular event, that was climate change, and I was, you know, impacted this way. So we still have a ways to go, but I'm still fairly optimistic we'll get there.
Let's go back to our callers now. Peter is with us in Viola. Peter, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to tell us about, Peter?
Well, I just wanted to throw in a little comment here about the role of managed grazing in building soil and sequestering carbon in the agricultural landscape.
Yeah, is this something you work in, Peter?
Yes, so we have a 220-acre farm here in southwest Wisconsin where we raise cattle and sheep and pigs and goats and chickens, and we rotate them through our pastures very rapidly. So every group spends about a day in one place, and then we give each paddock a long rest, 30 to 40 days. And when we come back, that gives all the biology a chance to rest. The plants grow a lot. And then every time we graze, we're trampling vegetation, which is building soil, and also plant grass roots often will slough off when they get grazed, which builds soil kind of from the bottom up and the top down. And we've documented here on our farm, in the past 5 years, we've built 3 inches of topsoil just through managed grazing.
Peter, thank you so much for sharing your experience there. You were touching on that. There can be kinds of agriculture, even animal agriculture, that build soil and trap greenhouse gas emissions.
Exactly. That's the exact kind of story we need to multiply by, you know, certain orders of magnitude. You know, the 90 million acres of corn and beans, you know, that we might be, you know, trying to grow here. I mean, these are great examples, great stories, and there's more and more of these that we keep hearing about.
in our last, thanks a lot for that call. In just our last few moments, Chris, what do you hope that policymakers, in particular government leaders, take and do with this report on agriculture from the United Nations?
I think first they need to understand that, you know, we know a lot about the system. There's a lot of facts, a lot of things we know. There's some things we don't know yet. You know, I'd like to continue to see more, you know, resources put into research and funding available so we can continue to answer those questions. But I'll go back to a statement I made before that someone's got to stand up and make a bold statement or goal to reach, whether it's some type of measurable change that we can work towards rather than just talking about it. So that's my hope.
Chris, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Great. My pleasure. Great to be here.
That's Chris Kucharik, professor and chair of UW-Madison's Department of Agronomy and professor of environmental studies. He was with us today to talk about a new report from the UN's International Panel on Climate Change that says there need to be some big changes in land uses like agriculture to avoid some of the worst effects of climate change. That report, as we've heard, also has recommendations for the future of agriculture. Coming up Monday at Central Time, Wisconsin is kicking off a new effort to create awareness of elder abuse and to help stop it from happening. We'll dig into the problem and some possible solutions. UW researchers have invented a new virtual camera that can help people see around corners. How does it work? I don't know. We'll talk to one of the researchers. And we'll meet eight women who paved the way for popular music in the United States and check out a new NPR project featuring their lives and their music. That, look at some of the top news stories of the day. It's all coming up Monday here on Central Time.